You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. It's Food Friday. Everyone likes a good story, and our next guest believes that even the food you eat has an important backstory. When you think back about some of the foods you ate as a kid or while traveling or maybe meeting an important new person, they likely still mean something to you today because of the memories they hold. Chef Edward Lee spent 2 years traveling around the highways and byways of America, his mission to sample some great food and to gather the untold stories of small restaurateurs, immigrants, and small-town America. Edward Lee is the chef and owner of several restaurants in Louisville, Kentucky. He's been nominated for a James Beard Award several times. You may have seen him appear on the PBS series The Mind of a Chef. His new book is Buttermilk Graffiti, A Chef's Journey to Discover America's New Melting Pot Cuisine. Edward, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, what led you to set out on this road trip, finding the food, not the famous restaurants around the country, these places that most of us might overlook?
Well, so I am a big fan of the hole-in-the-wall restaurant. And I don't know, you know, if your listeners travel this way, but I always go to a new city and I'll do like a fancy meal one night. And then the next day I try and find that hole-in-the-wall place, that mom-and-pop restaurant, you know, some food truck, something that's really embedded in the community, and it's not always sort of written about or you can find online. And after, you know, years of doing that, I kind of came to this realization that, you know, we write so much about the celebrity chef-driven restaurants, and we write very little about the other side of restaurant cuisine, even though the food there can be just as good, if not better. And so I thought, it'd be interesting if I could do this journey. And my curiosity was there a story to tell? And I was pleasantly surprised by the fact that there were stories to tell.
Before we get to those stories, I got to ask, I would love to eat at those places when I go traveling. I don't know how to find them. How do you find that hole in the wall?
That's the beauty of it, is that, you know, in this day and age where we have the internet and all these lists and everything, a lot of these places are still hidden, you know, so you can't go the traditional way. A lot of it's just asking locals. For me, it's going someplace, you know, finding some locals that you trust and you think have good palate, you know, and then invest. So you kind of be like a little bit of an investigator. You really got to, you know, sniff it out. And every town has one. Every city has them. But you just got to put in the legwork. And sometimes, you know, like I've eaten in some bad places too, you know, sometimes they're not always correct. But you got to be willing to strike out every once in a while too.
Now, there's a part two. You eat the food, but at least for this book, and I suspect you probably do this in general, you talk to the people cooking. You try to get their stories. What led you to want to do that too?
Yeah, it's funny. A lot of times people think that the end of the journey is, you know, the finding the great meal, right? And eating that wonderful dish is like the pinnacle of the journey. And for me, it's just the beginning. Because if I'm in a restaurant and I really enjoy the food, my curiosity goes nuts, you know? And I want to know more about the person behind the dish, or the culture behind the dish, or who's responsible, why is this here? And then, you know, my next curiosity sometimes is like, why don't more people know about this? Why isn't this place, like, you know, on every TV show? and so that to me is just like, it drives, yeah, listen, at the end of the day, if you love food, you have to love the people that make the food, right? So I'm just infinitely curious about the decisions people make, or especially a lot of the immigrant families that I talk to, and how they got here, and how they uphold these recipes, or how these recipes change because they got here. And I just, every story is so unique. And I really enjoyed sort of meeting these people along the way.
Yeah, that you find many immigrants along the way. Some of them at restaurants, some are home cooks too. Mm-hmm. What is it? And you see a lot of great American food being driven by immigrants in particular. What is it that's happening there?
Well, it's you know, it's the passion for preserving. You know, I think what happens with every immigrant group, and it's the same with my parents, right? You come here, and then you get homesick, right? And so you can't go back to Turkey or Korea or Mexico or you know, Poland or wherever you come from. And so you use food as your nostalgia, right? Food is sort of your gateway to, like, you know, the homeland. It's the cheapest way, right, to sort of relive a memory. And for often for many immigrants, flying back home once a year or twice a year is not an option. So really it becomes about the food. And the food is not just about nutrition or nourishment. It's about, like, linking something to a former life, and that's very deep, you know. And so you just find these stories in the food, because through this food you're gonna hear the stories of the homeland and how they got here and why they got here.
Can you share one of your favorite stories from one of those immigrant cooks?
Yeah, so one of the first chapters that I wrote, is one of the first chapters that I researched, was in Lowell, Massachusetts, and it's a pretty large Cambodian community. Actually, it's a very large Cambodian community that lives in Lowell, Massachusetts, and I'd known about this for a while, and so I went there and discovered this wonderful chef named Sam from Cambodia, and he. You know, did the typical immigrant experience, came, had a kid, put this kid through school, did many jobs, was a mechanic, you know, did all number of odd jobs to make way. And, you know, at the age of almost 50, he decided that he was going to pursue his passion, which was to open a restaurant and do sort of his Cambodian food. And you just don't, those, you hear a lot of those stories. They often don't end in success, right? Mm-hmm. You don't open a restaurant at 50 and most of the time it doesn't work out. And here was this guy, and I asked him, I said, where do these recipes come from? Because the food's delicious. And he said to me, it's just from what I remember eating when I was 12, because that was the last time that he was in Cambodia. So here's a guy, you know, and of course I immediately started to cry. But here was yeah. a guy who had suffered so much. It had been driven from his homeland when he was 12 and had never really lived in Cambodia as an adult. And then he's just trying to relive his childhood through his food. I mean, it's very powerful. And his food, I think when you have that much love and creativity for it, it shows in the food. So the food is delicious. Like, just first off, it's delicious food. And then it made me curious, and I hear the story behind it, and it actually makes the food taste that much better, knowing that story behind it. And I do think that when you understand the backstory of some of these chefs, and this is it goes for any chef, whether it's a high-end chef or a mom-pop store, when you do take the time to know their story, understand their opinions, the food takes on a different perspective, and it actually, to me, it tastes better.
Talking to Chef Edward Lee about his new book, Buttermilk Graffiti, A Chef's Journey to Discover America's New Melting Pot Cuisine. Well, I don't want to leave Wisconsin out, because you came here as part of your research, and you were on the hunt for a solution to a mystery. Why don't we have really cool new German food in this country?
And one of your listeners has to give me an answer, or better yet, open a wonderful German restaurant, because the Wisconsin is you know, obviously, it's German, you know, it's a wonderful German culture that's still there, you know, and there are good restaurants. I don't want to be dismissive, but you know, my wife is of German heritage, and you know, we have a joke. We anytime we're in a traveling together in a city, if there's a German you know, we Google it. If there's a German restaurant nearby, we always go. And they're usually terrible. Just the unfortunate part about it. Like, it is very, very, very hard to find good German food in America. And so I said, listen, we're going to get in a car. I've always wanted to do this. And we're going to go to the center of German culture in America and go to Milwaukee. And, you know, we drove from Louisville, Kentucky. So we went through Indiana. So we stopped at a couple of places there. We went to Chicago. So just that whole journey, I mean, we must have eaten at easily a dozen German restaurants. And we just drove through the whole Milwaukee and west of Milwaukee, just in search of this. And you know, obviously it was a you know, a journey in search of German food. But it was also a very personal journey for me and my wife. And you know, we talked a lot about her heritage and her culture and her, you know, and, you know, she's obviously American. Her family's been here for at least seven generations. But I think you still, you know, you still preserve some of that DNA inside you.
We inspired some recipes. It sounds like we've got a couple of them at our website, WPR.org/foodfriday. I'm really curious. A component in one of these recipes is a butternut squash sauerkraut. Tell us about that.
So, you know, I'm Korean by heritage, and Korean food has a huge you know, pickling component to its cuisine. And obviously German food does too, which is also why I love German food. Like the pickling and the fermenting part of German food to me is so delicious. And we often think of sauerkraut as being cabbage, you know, which obviously is the most popular form. But you can pickle anything. And I know this because in Korea, we pickle anything and anything that moves. So, you know, when I was testing these recipes, it was fall, and we had just come from Wisconsin. It was winter in Wisconsin. I thought, you know, technically cabbage season was over. So what would you do if you didn't, you know, if you were 200 years ago and your farm had already harvested its cabbage? Well, you would pickle whatever you had. So I thought, oh, we should try it with butternut squash. And lo and behold, it was actually really delicious. And so I love doing, like applying techniques to ingredients that you normally wouldn't think to do. Like pickling squash, but it's really delicious, and it's something that you can do pretty easily.
Again, we have that recipe up at WPR.org/foodfriday. I wanted to ask you about another experience. You were in Dearborn, Michigan during Ramadan, and you decided, I want to try that breaking the fast in the evening like people would. Talk about what it was like not eating all day and then eating the food, drinking the drinks.
Well, If you're like me and you like to eat, not eating all day is pretty miserable. it was very hard, and I didn't know this at first, but you're not supposed to drink water either. So that was a whole other component. And actually, the first day that I did it, the thirst was so much more painful than the hunger. You know, the not being able to drink all day. And it was really, it was an experience that I'm really glad I did, because it was something that again, I'm not Muslim, and it's not, I don't know if it got me closer to the Muslim culture, but it was something being in that community and when everyone else was fasting, having that communal experience and having also them respect me because I was fasting with them, right? That I was here, you know, more or less as a journalist to write about food. And I thought it would just be impolite, if you will, for me to be gorging out on food and asking people all these questions while they're fasting. And so, and there's a story in the book, and you know, I wanted to be respectful and humble. And also I wanted to really understand culture from their point of view, not through my eyes, but through their eyes. And so I decided to fast, and I did it for about 3 days, which is not nearly, you know, as long as Ramadan is, but, it was really enlightening. And the funny thing was that at the end of the fast, when you break the fast, you know, I thought, oh my God, I'm going to have, you know, 14 lamb chops and a bowl of hummus and all this rice. And in reality, I was corrected, and they said, no, you don't do that. You don't gorge yourself, you know, just to get through that. You're actually supposed to eat very humbly and eat very simple things and drink tea. It was amazing. It was amazing. Yeah, I looked better. I felt better. I lost a little weight. The hardest thing was actually coming, because then I thought, oh, you know, I had sort of done my field work, and I was coming back home, and I thought that I would continue to fast for the rest of Ramadan, and it was impossible. Like, so once I took myself outside of that context and outside of that culture, where it wasn't a shared experience anymore, and I was the only one doing it, it just became impossible. And it was fascinating to be put in that experience.
We'll leave it with that story. Edward, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
We've been talking to Chef Edward Lee about his two-year-long journey to learn more about food around America, the immigrants, many who make it, chefs, restaurateurs, maybe off the beaten path. He says you take the time to find that hole-in-the-wall, out-of-the-way restaurant, talk to people there while you're eating, you might be very pleasantly surprised. His new book about that experience is called Buttermilk Graffiti, A Chef's Journey to Discover America's New Melting Pot Cuisine.